Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Well, 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 welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners while listening to this some other time, not today. But however you've decided to spend the hour with us, we're really, really, really glad to have you. So tonight, our topic is we're going to be talking a little bit about Asian men dating in Vancouver, as well as experiencing and really living through yellow fever. So I've got some really special guests on tonight with me, which I'm very excited about. I have Ronald Lee, and I've got Vincent Ng. Oh, I did pronounce Ng?
Yeah,
okay, good. Right. Sometimes I'm terrible with names, and I just want to make sure I get it right in the first place. For Man Meets Woman, and as well as that, you've also got a website as well that's more specific towards Asian men. Do you want to tell me a little bit about?
Good evening. Yeah, we have a website called Vancouver Asian Men, and the reason why we have this is because we noticed that there are a lot of Asian men all over the world, particularly in North America, and zeroing down in Vancouver, who have a lot of questions when it comes to dating. It could be because they feel misplaced in North America, or It could be because there's a bit of a culture clash. You know, they're brought up believing one thing, and they're finding that the reality is much different trying to date in Vancouver.
So do you find that more for people who were born and raised in Vancouver or for people who have come over from another country and become Canadians?
I think it's really the case for both.
Okay.
Certainly there are many more Asian Vancouverites who were born in Canada who are able to acclimatize themselves better, but you still get a large percentage of Asian men who seem to, have a little difficulty when it comes to dating in general. And I mean dating anyone.
Anyone. Yes. So whether or not it's someone who's Asian as well, or whether it's a mixed relationship, which I am a product of, and I'm very proud of that. I'm a Eurasian girl. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could be because of lack of male role models. It could be because of the previous stereotypes in North America. I mean, where we are today isn't as far ahead as we could be. It's almost like where African Americans were in Hollywood, maybe back in the 70s and 80s. So there, if you track how that minority became mainstream and they're now winning awards and Oscars and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, we're sort of on that path, but not that far ahead
we're
yet.
Not quite there yet, which just kills me because I know for like there's Asian people, especially in Chinese history, and I am half Chinese, so I'm speaking more to that because that's what I know. But even back during the railway, for example, I know my great grandfather came over back then, and so it's interesting because Chinese, in other words, we've had a huge history. Like our Chinatown's one of the oldest ones in Vancouver. So, well, actually, in North America, specifically. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in Richmond, we've got a huge Asian population as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things we talked about when we were chatting in the green room, and I'm not sure if it was Vincent or Ronald, which of you brought it up, but just in regards to Asian, that means a multitude of different things, where at one point it was very, very specific, and now it's got such a broader spectrum. Do you want to speak to that, Vincent?
Yeah, I kind of noticed that, when I was a kid, it was kind of simple. Like, it was, it was Chinese people, and you spoke Cantonese, or you didn't. And it was, we talk about Chinese-born Canadians versus immigrants. And now it's kind of become very complicated, where now there's a plethora of people that speak Mandarin, and there are people that speak Cantonese, and there are people that are Korean Asian and Japanese Asian, and so they all have their very specific cultural needs that even though I think we do face, the interesting thing is we do face a lot of the same similar stereotypes in terms of, being a more feminized male compared to, a lot of Western cultures or European cultures. But I think all of us, we still have our very small intricacies, especially when it comes to language, and how we perceive ourselves, especially in the media and the movies have been very different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, of course, I keep thinking in terms of movies, we've got, like, Jackie Chan. But in terms of role models, you're right. There isn't mm-hmm. a lot of role models in that sense.
The moment we have a leading man who is amazingly sexy, who is amazingly, A-list talent in North America, that is the moment that a lot of attitudes towards Asian men will change, particularly in terms of Asian men's confidence. Because now they see that they can be that person, someone that they can model after. But that will be a complete shift in terms of how
we're perceived.
How are we perceive ourselves, you see? Because up to now, if you think about how we're portrayed in media, we're asexual, meaning we're not the attractive guy. We're either a geek or a martial artist. And really, there's nothing in between.
Yeah.
Right? If we can have a strong male character or several male characters, much like there are now strong female characters, Asian female characters.
Like Lucy Liu's amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah. But,
very mainstream,
the moment we can do
too.
That, then we can redefine who we are. So, you know, to a point, who has stereotyped us? Has Hollywood stereotyped us? Or are we allowing ourselves to be stereotyped because
of what's out there as we replicate a lot of things that we do see in the media.
Correct.
And of course, I keep thinking of Tony Leung and he's totally hot. I'm sorry. So it's just when you're mentioning, just there's not very many, and it's not mainstream, but yes, there are some who are very good looking. So
yeah.
I have to say. So in regards to North America, even though Vancouver's a multicultural city, do you still find there's a lot of stigma? What are some of the stereotypes that you find that Asian men face, just in general?
Stereotypes. Well, it depends on, I find that it depends on what generation you're asking.
You mentioned that in the green room, which I thought was great, where you're saying there's a difference between Generation X and Generation Y.
Right. You see, in Generation X, you have a lot of men who were brought up with no real strong stereotypes and no real strong cultural identity, even. So they're brought up believing that they are unattractive or they have to do well in school and that's all they're good for. And that, combined with the strict upbringing that many of these men had, you know, you get really communities of really shy or insecure Asian men. Compare that to Generation Y. You get a lot of Asian men today who are brought up being told that they can be whoever they want, thanks to Anthony Robbins. They're being taught, you know, the power of positive thinking, thanks to, like, The Secret and the Law of Attraction. And this generation of Asian men are almost the complete opposite of the previous generation, where they believe they can do anything. They believe that, you know, whatever they want, all they have to do is think positively. And, you know, there are no racial barriers that they are aware of. Mm-hmm. But mind you, Generation Y means anyone born after 1980. So, you know, we're still talking about a segment of the population that's still young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe after put a few years, you know, under them, they'll, you know, they might see things maybe a little bit differently. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think, Vince?
Well, no, what happened a lot when I was growing up, I think the interesting thing was that the career would find you the woman and not necessarily the man would find the woman. So, and that was always the difficult part, because it was always the stereotype that if you're a good breadwinner, woman would naturally come to you. And I think it's no longer like that. I think that just because you have a good job, you know, people in general, women in general, are a lot more demanding of their men. You know, you have to be more than just the breadwinner. You have to be more than that. You have to be romantic. You have to be caring. You have to be good with kids. And so what's happened is that we've kind of grown up where a lot of the Asian men I know, they have these really great jobs and they're really high up on the ranks, but they're just terrible with women. You know, they have no idea how to communicate with them. You know, and the funny thing is that what's happening is the women don't really know how to communicate to the men exactly what they're looking for. So it's kind of leading to a very confused generation where we're all trying to find out what exactly it means to be a Chinese man and what does it mean to be an Asian man. Yeah,
that's very typical for Asian men, actually, to grow up thinking, I don't deserve a woman until I get a, you know, high-paying job, or until I buy a house and a car, I don't deserve to get married. But in actuality, there's nothing stopping from you from, you know, a 21-year-old Asian man from going out there and dating, you know, the women that he wants. You know, this is all a limiting belief. So,
Why do you think there was a changeover from Generation X to Generation Y? What was it in the parents of the Generation Ys that was different that you found?
That's a great question, Caroline, because typically a lot of Generation Y parents are immigrants over here, because there was a large flood of immigrants from Hong Kong and China, particularly Hong Kong, in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of Generation X could be first generation Asian men here. However, by the time, you know, flash forward to maybe the 80s and 90s, perhaps their parents were westernized at this point, or they could be second generation. So they
were raised by a lot of bananas is what I'm hearing. And in other words, I mean, yellow on the outside, white on the inside, where they felt like they're crossed between two different cultures and they wanted their kids to fit in.
But that's possible. You know, that the parental influence for men, of course, women as well, but growing up, the parental influence is very strong in all cases. There is, of course, the school system and our peers. So, you know, if you're brought up with all your friends believing you can do anything you want as well, and everyone's watching, you know, The Secret, then everyone's going to eventually, you know, figure out this can be the answer for getting what I want.
And perhaps the other thing, too, I grew up in Kerrisdale, and I'm not going to tell you how old I am, even though I'm sure somebody could Google me and find
it. She's 18.
I wish. Actually, I don't wish. I actually like my age. But what I was going to say is when I grew up, I think I was the only one that was half Asian in my school. And when people had asked me, what do you want to be when you grew up? I actually wanted to look like, and this is going to show my age, of course, I wanted to look like Chrissy from Three's Company. I wanted to grow up blonde hair, blue-eyed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand why I couldn't. And it was interesting, whereas now, because I know I've done presentations at different elementary schools where sometimes the majority are different types of from Asian cultures, and where the whitey is not predominant number one anymore. So and when I say number one, I mean in terms of the demographics as to, like, if you actually put it in a pie graph. I'm saying that very badly, but you know what I mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, no. I actually grew up in East Vancouver myself, and, you know, that whole area was pretty much was Asian. You know, it was kind of interesting because I didn't realize that until I kind of stepped into, ironically, into UBC, that, you know, I actually came from an Asian-dominant school, and it was such the norm for me to be okay with that. But like, you're right, I realized when I reversed it, actually I ended up being in forestry my first year, and it was a really odd experience to be the outsider, you know. And when I think when people grow up to be the outsider, all of a sudden who we are and what we stand for, number one, becomes really mixed, because we really don't know. And number two is that we're consciously much more aware when we are standing out versus being, you know, part of the mainstream, and that really heightens, you know, who are we and who am I? And that can be really troubling when it's dating, especially when we're trying to express who we are. Who are we when we're on a date? That gets really complicated.
I think it's complicated for everyone, and I guess that goes down to who are men and women in this day and age? We'll focus on Asian for tonight, but if it comes out that you want to keep it in more general comments, that's totally okay too. Because, I mean, you were mentioning it earlier where, you know, it was really important for an Asian man to go out and get the good job, be the breadwinner, and especially with the pressure in terms of for schooling. I know I experienced it myself. My mom's Chinese, so I do know. And with that, where it's just that pressure and where you need to do that, and especially as a male, especially. But now it's like one of those things where it's just like, I honestly think men and women don't really know what the roles are anymore. They're not really defined, where if you went back to, say, the 1930s, where, you know, the woman was the really cute little housekeeper who stayed at home with the kids and, you know, made the meals, you know, greeted the man when he came home with the beer and stuff, which, to be honest, I actually like doing that still, but, you know, I don't think I'm the average woman, but it's one of those things that, there's not those roles anymore. And sometimes I even hear whether in general is dating, where people don't know sometimes whether they're even on a date because they're, it's hard to define what is a date this, mm-hmm. in this day and age.
One thing about Vancouver is that we don't have a dating culture.
No.
If you go, you know, I've coached in New York, and mm-hmm. there, they have dating culture.
Okay.
So it's actually easier to meet people. It's easier to, you know, find a date and go on a lot of dates, and even to meet people randomly, you know. Which is surprising. You would think New York would be harder.
Mm-hmm.
But no, in Vancouver, you know, we hear constantly that, you know, if a guy approaches a woman and tries to get a date or get a phone number, you know, he gets a cold shoulder. So you got a lot of men, a lot of Asian men particularly, who are just scared to death about that because they've had that one bad experience.
Mm.
And as a result, a lot of women complain that just there's no men in the city. You know, we checked the census actually for 2009,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually, you know, 50-50 now. It used to be there was more women than men, but now it's 50-50. So, you know, I mean, you would figure that with these stats, that people should be, you know, able to meet and date more often, but that's not the case.
Do you think part of it is because of the fact that we are such a fast food culture that in some ways, like with Facebook, with Twitter, all the social media, that somehow we don't get off our asses off the computer and we don't go and meet people face to face? And when we do, we don't have anything to say because we don't have that experience anymore.
Yeah, for sure. You know, one thing about Vincent, he's a conversation expert. So, you know, one thing that I don't want to speak too much for you, but, you know, no, one thing we emphasize is, you know, get off the computer and go meet people in person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it works out so much better that way.
Yeah, because I think what happens a lot with Asian men is that it is a very comfortable position to be behind Facebook and to be behind, like, MSN and, oh, can I get your email? And it's a really safe space, but what I've found out really happens is that, especially for Asian men, that it eventually will stunt their growth at some point in the dating or relationship phase.
Hmm.
And that's where it gets kind of dangerous. Like you're saying, you know, most people, I talk to a lot of guys, and there's nothing wrong with the organic way of dating, which is, oh, let's start off as friends. But it's such a weirdly, I have to, like, I had a friend, he went on 3 dates with a girl. You know, both Asian, and she automatically assumed that after 3 dates they were boyfriend and girlfriend without even discussing anything.
Had he kissed her?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah. And but he had interpreted that we're still getting to know each other, and that's where it can get really complicated, where, you know, I think that that Asian men, you know, they don't really know how to ask women out. You know, and they don't know how to clarify so that the woman knows what's going on. Because I've noticed that too. Like, people are just so, they're misguided. They have no idea where they're part of their relationship.
Partly because,
going.
You know, what we see a lot of is there's a lack of education in how to date in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
for both Asian men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your story, which you just told us, Vince, I'm not totally surprised. You know, to the point now, actually, I think. Sometimes I think we're teaching a lot of men social skills.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that they can't even, you know, they can't date. They can't even, you know, have a conversation properly because they're too scared or too shy. And I think it's because, one, either they grew up under, you know, really strict circumstances from really strict parents. So
mm-hmm.
they, you know, they're afraid to speak out and do whatnot, you know, and socialize. So they always felt like they're left out. You know, they just never learned. Somehow,
yeah.
One way or another, and now they want to go out there.
Mm-hmm.
They're a complaint we have very often is for Asian men. They're told by their parents, or they're brought up believing, I can't date until I'm like 25 or whatever.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
When I'm in university, no dating, all school. The moment you graduate, where's your girlfriend? I'm like grandchildren.
I agree. Yeah, actually, it's funny you mentioned that because my dad, you know, he's a great guy, but he used to say it's like, oh yeah, we're. You know, where are your girlfriends? And you know, when I was a lot younger, it's like, where are your girlfriends? Your brother's dating, and you know, even to the point where he's like, you know, I'm a little worried that you might be gay, you know. And he was joking, but almost half-heartedly being serious, because there was that stress on saying like, oh, what about get your education, get your career going? But at the same time, what was interesting that he would kind of go, oh, you know, when I was your age, I had like 100 girls lined up at my door, knocking on my door. Obviously, a complete lie is what it was. But the interesting thing was that even though I think that he was joking about it, he never actually was able to explain any of that, though. You know, and that's, I think that's the interesting thing, is that we talk about Asian men and the intergenerational gap. I think a lot of Asian men don't actually know how to teach their sons about the birds and the bees. I can tell you for a fact, my parents never, ever taught me sex. I know that for a fact. They just assumed, like, it was really weird, because one day, you know, my dad's, like, telling me, it's like, oh, yeah, I think it's your mom's, you know,
responsibility.
You know, yeah, you know, and but it really, I learned all my sexual skills really from the educational system. So it's kind of...
Oh, that's
oh, you poor
is that,
soul.
Is that what you call VHS? To this day, I complain to my parents about that same thing. You know,
yeah.
That, you know, when I was growing up, you guys never told me anything about dating or women or whatnot. I had to learn the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, though, the hard way for me meant the better way.
I agree.
But their reasoning was, well, no one had to teach us. You just sort of know this. And I'm like, really? And I, well, that's obviously, I somehow I missed the boat on that, you know, missed the class on that lesson then.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
No, it is really interesting. And it's interesting, actually, I find it fascinating just with the, you're kind of, it's kind of a good thing, actually. I actually grew up with a mother who actually used to hand guys a keychain with a quarter on it and would actually say, my daughter is a virgin. I expect her to remain that way. If you want to sleep with her, you're going to have to take this quarter and find a payphone and call her dad and ask for permission. And when I actually finally lost my virginity, she was actually really angry at me for quite a while because I didn't ask my dad for permission first.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's interesting. She is probably, you're right, you are very lucky in that regard. In terms of girls, because we were chatting about yellow fever a little bit as well, where there is a lot of guys, especially Caucasian guys, I see it a lot, where I, and a girlfriend of mine coined the phrase yellow fever, which I think has been around for a while, but just men who are obsessed, where it's like, oh, she's Asian, she's Chinese, you know, she's Japanese, you know, she's Korean, I have to date her because of what, you know, in terms of what she looks like, her ethnicity. And do you have anything to say about that?
Do you see much of that here in Vancouver, Vince, yellow fever?
I don't think I see it as much as people pronounce
perceived.
It to be.
I know in the States, you know, there are, maybe in San Francisco, you would see that a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vancouver, we have such a good multicultural blend that, you know, I do know a few people, a few guys and a few women who prefer to date outside the race. So I know a few, you know, Caucasian men who prefer to date Asian women, but certainly not too many.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I think it's just more of a bit of almost like a running gag and joke, just because there are, I think that, because the funny thing in Vancouver, I think everybody knows somebody that has yellow fever, which kind of makes it more pronounced in Vancouver. Like, I do know people, yeah, they have yellow fever and it's very pronounced. But surprisingly, when I look at the actual percentages or the proportion of people that I know, most of them are pretty open. It's like, oh yeah, like if, you know, I find her interesting, I'll date her, but I don't meet a lot of people that go, I want to exclusively date Asians, you know?
I don't know. I beg to differ on that one because I do have some guy friends who are very, very specific, who only date Asian women and are very, very specific, which I've never asked in full detail whether or not, because one of them argued with me, it was the same as if somebody liked dating blonde hair, blue-eyed. It's the same thing, and it had nothing to do with the cultural thing. But I was curious in terms of that, because depending on what type of Asian, whether it's Korean, Japanese, Chinese, Mandarin, Cantonese, what, in terms of that, there are differences in terms of how the woman's raised, whether she's more submissive and those types of things.
I do know a few Caucasian men who prefer to date Japanese women. And I do know some Caucasian women who prefer to date Asian men, Oriental usually.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's certainly people, you know, we're not... what we're saying is that we see a minority, not like a huge, you know, what... this could be maybe something we get from the States where we think this is a huge epidemic, but it's not really.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily an epidemic, but I do agree. What I think is quite interesting is not necessarily so much that they like Asian women because they're Asian. Like you're saying, it's the submissiveness is what they really like. Like they're saying the whole how Japanese culture tends to honor the man. They work hard and you take good care of the man. That's not to be questioned. Honor first, you know. And so when there's that kind of culture when a woman is brought up in that kind of culture, it can be very appealing to a man, because we like our egos fed, you know, especially, you know, so...
That's true. Yeah. Men like to be told they're great. Women like to be told they're beautiful.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that there's a lot of men out there that that really like the submissive culture that they just don't get anywhere else. And I think that's what's really attractive to them.
Mm-hmm. And I can actually see that appealing as well, because, again, going full circle back to where we were chatting about the fact that there's no defining roles anymore for men and women, that is a very defined role. And... Mm-hmm. Margot Danilos, who is a, she does, I don't know if you've met her or not, she's a life coach and specializes in relationships and cognitive therapy. Mm-hmm. I've had her on the show, and she was mentioning that men actually, in terms of the patterns of love, actually fall in love with women because of the way, how we make them feel. First.
Because of how we make women feel?
How women make men feel.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So
yes.
I can totally see that if a man was into, because if a woman's submissive and she's treating him like a king, I can totally see that. Whereas on the flip side of that, women fall in love with men because of who they think they are, which is why, because, well, we change our mind about things, and sometimes, like, you know, for example, say somebody's really into sports and stuff like that, where at the beginning it's like, oh, he's so fit, he's so into all that stuff. And then it's like, oh, all he does is pay attention to sports. He's not paying attention to me. So, and all of a sudden it changes, because as women we keep trying to change things constantly. And the poor guy's just like, I don't know what just happened there, you know? You this, and this was okay 6 months ago, so why is it an issue now?
Yeah.
I should mention that my specialty is in attraction and seduction. And in breakups. So
breakups.
You would think they wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be the case, but the two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. So for what you're describing, you know, that's very huge. You know, women constantly expect, you know, the guy to be great and whatnot, because she has this idealized picture of him. But after honeymoon phase, you know, then reality sets in, and now, you know, both sides are wondering, you know, what happened to us.
So how do we go along and keep that going?
The attraction?
Mm-hmm.
This is really, you know, I really pay attention to a lot of mature couples, perhaps, you know, the age of retirement, and see how do they
maintain their
chemistry and whatnot. Because I've seen some couples who have been together for, you know, pretty much more than half their lives, and the spark is still there. I think that, you know, this could be almost like we're, you know, I'm categorizing or stereotyping men here, but I think it's really the man's role to constantly attract a woman.
Mm-hmm.
The man's, you know, job here. Very often, a lot of breakups are initiated by the women. It's because she doesn't feel love. Is it because she feels that, you know, there's no chemistry left, or she's not being appreciated, because of the way that men and women fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so if that's the case, if women are feeling that they're not being appreciated and not being loved, and they're initiating the breakups more, as, you know, while at the same time men are thinking, you know, once we're committed in a relationship, then we'll stick it out to the end. Where men are failing is they are letting the love go down. They're letting themselves basically get lazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, we actually, you know, one thing that we're developing, Vince and I, is a relationship management course. Vince is an expert in relationships, from obviously my expertise, seduction and breakups.
Mm-hmm.
The solution is in knowing how to have a good relationship. Mm-hmm. That solves both sides.
Of
both
course.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is, you know, this is such a huge can of worms that...
I think that you know, what's really, like, you're talking a lot about the honeymoon phase, and eventually it does kind of come to an end. What's always been very helpful in my relationship, which is, I wish I could claim it, but it's not my concept, but Gary Chapman talks a lot about the five love languages.
Yeah.
But it's such a really basic concept, but most people don't follow that, so they end up continually show love that's not relevant to the other person. So, like, hey, I do this for you, that's my way of showing love, but to her that's just like, that's you being lazy and not being romantic. And I think that you're right, like, it's it's constantly, I think that with human relationships, variety is so huge. If you keep doing the same things, even if they are romantic, they lose their spark eventually, you know. And but it's like, I agree with Ronald, it's up to the man to continue to find ways, because it, I really truly believe it is up to the Asian man to find ways to be the man, to continue to find ways to love her. You know, kind of to toot my own horn, as a second year anniversary, I told my girlfriend I would blog 100 love letters exclusively just for her for the next year. But that's a lot of effort, mm-hmm. and that's not easy to do. But that is what keeps relationships going. It's that spontaneity of what's going to happen next. How much do you really love me? And can you show me love the way that I want to be loved? And I think that's what will get a relationship going, at least romantically.
Mm-hmm. And ideally, both sides are full, complete people, and they come into it with unconditional love. Because really, we see this a lot in Asian culture. One side's needy, or both sides are needy. And that never leads anywhere, because, you know, one person cannot make another person happy. And if someone's unhappy because there's something missing in that person's life, you know, they should find out what that is before they get into, you know, something as serious as a really long-term committed relationship.
Mm-hmm. So what are some things that they can do? Because I know you're doing a series of workshops and things mm-hmm. like that. So are those some things that they can do before they start dating? Because you mentioned you do you focus on attraction and things like that.
Exactly.
Is that something that gets covered in terms of your series for Asian men?
We do. You know, we have a lot of discussion topics on what do women want, what, you know, how do Asian men perceive themselves, mm-hmm. you know, what makes a good relationship. You know, so we covered a whole gambit for everything from meeting her to, you know, how to get as far as getting the ring on her finger. So
yeah, and I agree. And it's always the it's kind of the I think ironic and tragic part where it's like, well, you can either go to your parents for advice, which they're probably not going to explain it very well, or unfortunately, yeah, you kind of go with people that have kind of gone through the trenches and they have experienced it. And I don't want people to mistaken that this finding love is an easy, magical process. I think that's the feeling people get, like, oh, you just, it automatically happens. I know for us, the truth of it is that we do teach this stuff because we have been through the heartache, and we have in ways shed tears, and we've been on the highs and the lows, mm-hmm. And to come out on top and to know what makes a good dating lifestyle and a good relationship. Ultimately, for me, what I feel is that I want everybody to be just as happy as I am. I love my girlfriend, like, very, very much. She's dedicated. Ironically, in a way, she's actually from Beijing herself, so we have that kind of cross-cultural relationship. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, it's after 2 years, we still call each other every day, and we still tell each other we love each other. And that's exactly what we want to be able to teach Asian men that are looking for relationships.
Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome. I have a weird question for you.
Yeah.
How would you recommend in terms of, because you mentioned, Ronald, that it's the man's responsibility in terms of in terms of romance, and I'm thinking mm-hmm. in terms of when people are actually having a child, and after that, what would you recommend in terms of just sparking it up again? Because, of course, mm-hmm. there's huge changes.
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody's tired. If the woman's breastfeeding, she's mm-hmm. exhausted.
Right.
And, you know, she can't even think straight. The guy can't think straight. Sometimes just mm-hmm. the hormonal levels, both for men and women, because they've actually done studies where the guy sometimes even gains weight and deals with postpartum depression as well. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard. So what would mm-hmm. you recommend that people might be able to do?
What the man has to do, really, is to make some priorities in his life, such as always pay attention to his woman. Because so often that's the first thing that goes away when he loses, you know, when he gets busy, or when he, you know, stresses of life catches up with him. And that is danger, because when he's not paying attention to her, he's not knowing how she's feeling or what's going on. So over time, she'll start feeling, where's our love? Where's this guy, right? He's not here for me. He's not reliable. He's not dependable. So as a beginning, you know, he has to do that. Secondly, a man, ideally, and this is not
specifically Asian. This is for all men.
Not specifically Asian.
Okay.
A lot of men have to find out what their masculine power is. Find out what their role as a man is, what it means to be a man, and all that entails, including how to make a woman feel loved, which is really how to make a woman feel as feminine and as expressive as she can, because of how women expresses herself is through love. And so if he can understand his true role in the relationship and his true role, you know, to be on this world, that will create a lot of, that will almost in a way allow them to set up the relationship and how that'll be in the future. You know, one thing that we also talk about is, why are you together with her? And maybe plan in the beginning what will happen for the rest of your lives.
Hmm.
A lot of people don't have that discussion, so when they run into problems such as money, you know, finances and whatnot, people fall apart.
It's one of the reasons I still like the church, even though I'm spiritual, but with that, because of the fact they make you actually take the marriage counseling before you even walk down that aisle. Mm-hmm. So you actually do discuss things like money. Do you actually want to have children? Because I've known a lot of couples who have broken up because of that, where they change their mind sometimes, mm-hmm. but actually having some real thorough things, value systems, how do you want to raise your family, those types of things, and just really specific and getting to the nitty gritty of it, because a marriage, especially when you get to that level, it's almost like a business, mm-hmm. where it is literally your partner, mm-hmm. and through thick or thin, and richer for poorer, all that stuff, and it's just so vital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, in a way too, you have to be careful who you choose. You know, too often people date for 3 months and they get married, and then they realize this person is not the person I thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
And in actuality, it seems now that people who who engage and marry at a more mature age, so meaning, you know, late 20s, 30s, have a better chance of having a more fulfilling relationship now, because they are able to, they know more about what they want, and they can choose, make better choices.
Yeah, which is, it's interesting we're talking about the marriage, because I think that's something that is worth talking about, like the whole Asian stereotype about how, when is it okay to get married?
And when is it?
You know, for me, I honestly believe whenever a couple feels they are. I know it sounds really vague, but I'm not a firm believer that, oh, like, you're 23 in China, so therefore you're old if you're not married, or you're 36, and that's too old. But realistically, I mean, we're talking about for life. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. like you're saying, it's almost like a business contract in the sense
it is.
That,
it's yeah. your partner.
Mm-hmm. One thing we notice as well, there are a lot of Asian men who are desperate to get married. And the reason is because culturally we have such a huge influence, or rather emphasis on the family unit. So, you know, for women, if there's a strong cultural identity for them, Asian cultural identity, then they definitely want to be married, and most of them want to be married by a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of Asian men coming to us, you know, who the big 30 mark is coming, and they really want to get married. They just want to find someone. The more westernized they are, the more they're willing to let that push back mm-hmm. to, like, you know, 35, 40, or just whenever. But a lot of Asian men are, you know, because their parents really put that image in them that you got to be married by a certain age and have kids and whatnot. You know, we do meet a lot of men who...
So in other words, all the women out there who are listening to this podcast right now who always panic at the age of 30, oh my God, I'm not married yet, oh my God, I'm not engaged, go date an Asian man.
you'll probably find a lot of love from Asian men, and we'll treat you good.
Although I was going to say maybe one of the reasons perhaps why they are scared, if they haven't had the experience in terms of dating, as you're mentioning, a lot of them don't. It's like you have to finish school first, you've got to get your career. So it's not till you're basically looking to get married. And it, depending in terms of how much sexual experience they've had, it's almost like one thing. So I don't know about you, but when I think of marriage, babies and things, I think of sex. It's part mm-hmm. of the package, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if somebody hasn't had a lot of experience, it's almost like, oh gosh, I'm looking at this person, I want to go out with them, and it's that thought, like, oh God, is she going to think that all I want is sex?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just at the back of the mind, mm-hmm. possibly. So
yeah, it's true. A lot of Asian men particularly have a lot of sexual hang-ups because mm-hmm. they think they're no good. And what we do is that we accelerate the learning process in all areas, not just sex, but also how to date.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with these men who basically fit that exact scenario you mentioned. They graduate, maybe they're in their mid-20s, they have mm-hmm. a job, and now there's pressure from their family and on themselves, because they do it themselves, that they have to be married and have a kid by 29 or 30. So
yeah, it's a bit of a, I think for a lot of Asian men, it's a bit of a struggling paradox where it's like, okay, well, especially when we're talking about growing up in a Western culture, playing the field, like, well, I want to play the field so that I don't regret feeling like I'm going to cheat on my wife later on. Or it's the opposite where it's like, okay, you're right, like, we have to get married by now. But either way, it's such a tug and pull. But by the time they're 30, it can be tough on them because it's you choose one or the other, right? But we want to make sure that Asian men are comfortable that, you know, is this really what they want? You know, and I think that's the tricky part is that we've been told so many things in our culture. A lot of them don't know what they want. I actually had a friend, which was, this was very common too, I see among Asian men, that you could only date one girl at one time. And that meant like if you, so if there was another girl that he was interested in, he wouldn't date her, go on any dates because he was committed to this person. And to me, that almost felt really weird because in Western culture, it's more like, okay, well, you know, you go date whoever you want. And until you both decide that you want to commit, it's kind of a free for all. But it is kind of interesting to see that, you know, how my friend's like, you can do that. I'm like, yeah, it's your choice. It's actually, I personally think it's better for Asian men to go out there and experience it so that here's, because later on, as long as they don't regret being with that person that they really want, they know for a fact, then I know for a fact that their relationship is going to last a lot longer, you know?
That being said, I do like the fact that they're only dating one at a time. And I'm going to quote the book, The Ethical Slut, in this, where it's, I think as long as you're really honest, if you are dating other people and you're honest with everybody that you're dating, where it's like, I really want to see more than one person, I like you a lot, and just having really clean boundaries. It's one of the reasons why with the BDSM community, even though it's not something that I'm as familiar with, but what I find interesting is the fact that they actually discuss and they actually lay out boundaries. And I think for all dating, it should really be that way. Even though you keep things open to grow, but it's just like, this is cool, this isn't cool, this is where I'm at right now, I'm looking for a relationship, this is, I just got out of one and I want to have some fun right now. But just being really, really specific about those things. And I think there's less chance of people getting hurt if those communication is just out in the open.
One thing we emphasize for ourselves is open, be honest about what you want as a man. You know, that's one of the traits of a master natural seducer, actually.
But with women, it's really hard because, of course, sometimes we don't know what we want. We think we do, and then we change our minds, which is poor guys.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's true. But, you know, in that case, though, we actually have a sister company called Happy Sex at You, and where we coach women. Or rather, we have female coaches that coach women. And this is where we have a similar process with them. It's like what we do with the men. We have them really examine what their values are and what they really want and, you know, what they want in the future.
So they can put together a criteria list as to what they're looking for. So then that way when they're going out there, it's not without the roadmap kind of
thing. And the criteria list is not like, you know, he's got to be a certain height or certain, you know, superficial things. Women have that already. What we try to do is go deeper into, you know, who is a good match for you based on who you are. So yes, a lot of women change their minds because they don't know who they are. They have no sense of identity. We try to, you know, have them at least become aware of who they are.
And I think it depends on the age too, and the fact that we're constantly evolving in regards. I think it's really important to have a criteria list, but constantly revisiting it to see, is this where I'm at still? Is this something that's important? I think core values will remain, but there will be things that change depending on where you are. Like, for example, you know, years ago, I think MSN did a study on it in regards to the increase in online dating, and it was because of the fact that there was more sexual harassment cases at work, and people, you know, don't go to church as often anymore. Whereas before, people used to either meet through friends, they met through church, so it's almost like dating local, if you think about it, almost like a farmer's market, as opposed to, but it is a lifestyle thing too. Like, for example, if, say, somebody liked going to country bars all the time and that was kind of like the things they liked to do, where somebody else was like a high fashion person. It, you know, just in terms of what they actually enjoy and how they like spending their time, like the person who likes to go out all the time as opposed to the person who actually likes to stay home, even though things can evolve if it is that right person, it just may not always be the fit. And sometimes they question in terms of online dating whether or not it's interesting. It's a good way for people to get out there. But I think you guys both said it right at the get-go, where it's just like, you got to get off your ass. And go and actually meet people, get away from the mm-hmm. computer and go see what's out there.
Exactly. You know, even if you do meet someone online, take it to in person as soon as you can. Mm. You know, there's a lot of hours wasted trying to
make
play the online game. You know, there is a strategy to win in that.
Do tell.
Yeah.
For online dating. Well, everything from, you know, your choice of photo to how well you respond to, you know, someone's posting to how you write your profile.
But how do you do that in regards to once you actually get them in face-to-face? Because people get 97% of their information from what they see and 3% from what they hear. So literally, we just know, like, as I know when I used to do casting, it's just like you feel it in your gut. It's like either it's right or it's wrong. Mm-hmm. And I find even with dating, the only times I've really seriously screwed up is when I've not listened to my gut where it said, oh, this isn't right, and I've wasted somebody's time as well as my own.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, how do we translate, how do we make a good choice online?
How to make a good choice online, if that's possible, without meeting them in person.
Without meeting them in person.
Right
this
away.
This is tough, because first of all, we know that a lot of people are lying online. Second of all, you know, a person's ability to write a good profile doesn't mean that they are, you know... Who knows? Maybe their sister wrote that profile for them.
That's true. I've had Catherine on from Try Sweet Talk, where she actually does write the profiles because she's straight advertising. So they can hire somebody to do it.
Right. So. Yeah. It's really hard to tell. You know,
maybe
a telephone conversation would be good, or through emails, you can maybe get a sense of their real personality.
But even then, I think that's the trouble, because eventually it all really catches up. Like, here's the interesting thing, because I have guy friends that say, I prefer online and I prefer email because it gives me a chance to think about my response. The issue is you can't think about your response on a date. You can't spend 15 minutes and go, let me get back to you. You know, it doesn't work that way. You know,
exactly.
And I think that's why, like, online, if you're good at your social skills, if you're good at your dating skills, which is obviously what we focus on, then being an online dater makes it easier. You
Got
know
it.
What to say. If you're an awkward kind of guy that, you know, sits at home and all you do is you're a keyboard jockey, then what's attractive about that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, you're going to get found out when you're meeting them in person anyhow. So
yeah, you know, there's no, if you have no social skills, you have no social skills regardless.
Right. And think about it this way. Suppose you're at Safeway or Superstore and you see your, you know, your ideal match, the most beautiful person you've ever seen in the world, picking up, you know, bananas. You want to be able to go up to them and say hi. Right? Or, you know, possibly more, get a phone number, get a date. If you don't develop your social skills and you're hiding behind a computer, you know, when that time comes, you'll miss the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. So what's next for you guys?
Well, we have, for Man Meets Women, what we have are a number of weekend courses coming up and our flagship 3-month course coming up.
3 months.
So this is one that we've developed. We're exclusive, I think, in the world to have a 3-month course like this. Starts in September. And this focuses on helping you understand who you are before understanding women, and then understanding how dating happens. So, you know, in this process, we actually get a lot of men who come to us because they want to find that one special person. Some of them might want to play the field of it first before finding that one special person, and that's understandable for a guy who's never done that. So, you know, we accommodate, certainly. But we find that most people come to us because they want a more wholesome approach, the genuine, authentic approach to having a satisfying relationship. For Vancouver Asian men, we have a community of Asian men that meet regularly to discuss these issues, and we go out socially as well. So that, you know, the way to find that is through the website, VancouverAsianMen.com. And, you know, we're constantly developing a few new things. For example, we mentioned how we're doing the relationship readiness and management courses that Vince are rolling out. Vince is doing a conversation thing. You'll talk about your book, right? In a second.
Oh, yeah.
You've
sure.
got a book.
He has a book. And one thing that I, you know, my passion actually at the moment, actually I'm more obsessed and passionate about the horrible breakup and how to recover from that area than I am with the attraction. Because in the attraction thing, I spent pretty much 13 years studying that. I, you know, I pretty much have a, I've been there, done everything I could in there.
So you're
now.
In a search for basically how to heal people, in other words, is what I'm hearing.
Exactly. So this is an area that I've been coaching people on how to heal. So I've done so much work in this area in terms of researching. Myself, I've been through a bad breakup, several. And I'm forming this into some, you know, into a book and into some way to deliver this to people who need it. So that's my passion right now. Talk about your book.
Yeah, well, for myself, it's not a published book. It's an ebook online, which is at www.conversationarts.com. But it's really to help out, specifically targeted to men that are having trouble with their social skills in general, how to start conversations. Really, like what we're talking about, like how do we naturally describe ourselves in a very fascinating way? You know, through stories. You know, how to use your body language. So I've written about that, yeah. So it's a 214-page book, and it seems to be helping a few people. I think somebody actually ended up meeting UFC champion Chuck Liddell after reading the book. It's like, I read that book, and I went and introduced myself to Chuck Liddell from the UFC. I thought that was really cool, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Well, you guys, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate it, Caroline.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation.
Thank you. Well, up next is Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour, which he is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He will be guiding you through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. And by the way, stay tuned to the website so you can get all the information about these guys, and then I'll have the podcast up tomorrow so you can get all the contact information, and as well as that, I might have a contest for you for the first weekend club, so you can get yourself up there, go on a date, whether or not it be with somebody that you are already with or whether it's somebody special. Just get yourself inspired and get off your ass, off the computer, and actually get out there and go and meet someone. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM. FM on CITR. We will be back. You are.
CITR 101.9 FM is proud to support the Vancouver Pride Society in the 2010 Pride season. With great events leading up to Pride, including Gay Day at Playland July 17th, Picnic in the Park July 24th, and the Friday Night Dance Party on Davie Street to kick off Pride weekend. The Pride Parade starts at 12 p.m. on Sunday, August 1st, and the party continues until 5 p.m. at the Pride Festival at Sunset Beach. Join us for an incredible celebration of culture and diversity. For more information and event listings, visit vancouverpride.ca.
Rock and roll!
Were you going to have a party here tonight, son?
I mean, whatever happens, your toes are still tapping.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway is Vancouver's hottest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres.
We like Biltmore, yeah, like Biltmore.
Check out BiltmoreCabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
And if you're a rock star, you're famous, and you rock out.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?